Okay. Thank you for having me. I'm also very nervous. And that's that's because about a week ago, I'd never really given any thought on BE stars. I did some work on a new form of instability that we choose to call irradiation instability. And we studied it at the inner edges of accretion disks. Hopefully, it will become obvious. Oh, this thing is here. Oh, well, that's fine. It will become obvious why we choose to study that particular type of setting. But for this talk, I decided to learn as much as I can about BE stars and talk about whether this instability would happen on the surfaces of the accretion disks. So please excuse my ignorance. I might get many things wrong. But before I get many things wrong, I want to explain to you exactly what this instability is. Okay. So here is my disk with a star that is shining. And what I really care about is radiation pressure and the fact that this disk casts a shadow upon itself. Radiation pressure here, I parameterize with the number beta, which is basically just the force of radiation pressure divided by the force of gravity. Both of them depend on 1 over r squared, so the spatial dependence is canceled. Just to point out that if you just put in, say, electron scattering opacity there, this number is just L divided by the Eddington luminosity. And then the radial opacity in the disk basically just extinguishes the amount of radiation pressure that the disk would see at the back there. And here, this term here is all the forces that I care about. It's gravity, radiation pressure, and the fact that radiation pressure is extinct. This is all that I care about. So these are my ingredients. And the mechanism for instability is described here in this schematic diagram. If you have a fluid element that is perturbed slightly radially, it will start oscillating in the epicyclic frequency. And if it's also casting a shadow, which is and then the disk where it is shaded gray would see the shadow of this fluid element. Where the disk is inside the shadow of a fluid element, it is slightly more shielded from radiation pressure. Where it is outside the shadow, it gets a positive push outward because it is now less shielded from radiation pressure. And the result of this is that the disk here will be perturbed to move in the same direction as the initially perturbed fluid element, and you create a global global instability mode. So we went through the math. This is completely bogged out. So this is our paper, my name, 2014. We derived the instability criterion, which is written here. It looks complicated, but there are some very simple things in here. First of all, beta. Beta is the strength of radiation pressure, so of course this doesn't happen if you don't have beta. And then you have e to the negative tau times tau. This quantity here diminishes as you go to the optically thin and optically thick limit. So this pinpoints the instability to happen only around when tau is approximately 1. And then you have a last factor there, which is a dimensionless gradient that depends on the disk parameters. For instance, there's sigma here, which is surface density. So if a large positive surface density gradient, this would promote instability. So from these three factors, you can see why we wanted to study the inner edges of disks, because at the inner edge, you get a positive gradient in sigma. There's nothing invert, so you expect tau equals to 1 to be nearby. So all you need to do is to crank up beta, then you get instability. So I've said a lot. Probably one of the best ways to see this is to actually see it happening. So I have a simulation here. This is the disk. This is emptiness. This is surface density plotted in log scale. And here's my edge. This edge becomes unstable. You see a linear global mode, and then it becomes fully nonlinear. Very highly asymmetric structures are developed. These red is actually 10 times the density of its initial surface density. Okay. Okay, so now I'm done with the boring stuff, and let's get on to surfaces of decretion disks. Here's my star, here's my decretion disk. And if you just, have a very naive look at this, it looks like this might be not that different from my inner edges of an accretion disk. Because if you just take a slice parallel to the midplane, you see that there is a tau equals to 1 location, and you have a positive sigma gradient because there's nothing inward. It looks like it would just happen. But of course, when you do something like this, you have a third dimension to consider. And this third dimension causes problems. And what I mean is this. In the midplane, where it is optically thick all the way, the fluid is rotating at Keplerian velocity. If you just go away from the midplane, you would eventually become optically thin. And in a steady disk, you would need to rotate a bit slower by a factor of square root 1 minus beta. And this is not good because of a vertical shear instability. J here is the angular momentum, J squared. And then the angular momentum of a Keplerian disk or any stable disk, of course, has a positive number here. And then this here is usually small, except that now when you have something like this, whereas the vertical length scale is usually a scale height, if a scale height is, say, a few percent, and then beta is a few percent, then this number is of order unity, then you get very strong vertical shear. Okay. So this looks complicated. I don't know really what to think about it. But of course, an easy thing to do is just to make a model and see what happens. So here's my model. There are many, many simplifications in here. But essentially, I have a density profile that is a decretion disk. Many things are set to a constant. Sound speed is set to a constant, so I have an isothermal equation of state. This number, in retrospect, is a little bit small, but not too far off. I use a alpha viscosity, with alpha being a constant as well. Beta, I set it to 0.3. Hopefully, someone in the audience could enlighten me whether this is a large or small number. I don't really know. And then opacity, I normalize it so that, say, at r equals to 2, vertically, you get optical depth of 20, which means the material light penetrates down to about 5% of the disk material only. This is my density profile. At r equals to 2, scale height is about 0.1. And then, yes.
Units is in
the unit of the Keplerian speed at the surface of the star is 1.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then here I plot once again, unfortunately blocked out, the quantity E minus tau times tau. So this is just saying that where you get the green part here is about tau equals to 1. Everything above is optically thin. Everything below is optically thick. So I mentioned that there are many, many simplifications to this, to what I just did here. And one of them is the fact that I don't have any real radiative transfer. And in principle, you should be hotter here and colder here. But my model is isothermal. And this is irradiation coming in as if there's a uniform light source coming, like a flat, like a tube or something coming in from this side. I think that is probably, well, the angle of irradiation does matter, but I think this is probably a reasonable first step, considering that this only goes from 0 to 0.5, and the star is actually 1. Okay, so I'm going to show you now another simulation movie here. The time scale here is in the units of the Keplerian orbital period at the surface of the star. My simulation domain is from 1.5 to 2.5. That is, in retrospect, a little bit too short, but it will capture the essence of what I'm trying to show. And here it goes. Okay, so almost immediately you see the vertical shear instability happening here. It takes the material from the optically thick region and bring it up to the optically thin region, and then it gets blown away by radiation pressure, so you see these sort of crazy oscillations. But in the meanwhile, everything here is axisymmetric until right about now your radiation stability sets in, and then you get rather strongly asymmetric structures developing on the surface of this disk. And it just keeps going. Over time, it appears to my eye that the instability mode is decaying to a lower and lower m. Now it's approximately m equals to 2. I'm not sure if that's real.
The source of mass is maintaining.
The source of mass, okay. So there is a reason why I said I think the domain was a bit too small. So when you have material, say material from the optically thick region, drag up to the optically thin region, suddenly it see that the gravity is reduced by 30%, so it starts oscillating big time by about 30% of its semi-major axes. And unfortunately, they would leave the domain here, so which is why you get some depletion of mass here, because they oscillate and they don't come back. And in the end here, you get a very large scale oscillation that is completely due to vertical shear that sort of concentrate mass around the center of this oscillation mode. Oh, okay. Actually, I'm almost done. Ran a bit too fast. So the verdict is that with the right conditions, and here I really should put a quotation mark here, because right as in what I just did, not saying that wouldn't happen in other conditions. I think if I have real radiative transfer, such that in the optically thin region it's a lot harder, the modal growth rate would reduce, and you end up with a smaller M-mode oscillation earlier on. But with the right conditions, I did see IRI happening on the surface of these stars, these disks. The consequence of that would would get emission time variability, and this variability would be at a fraction of the orbital period, because m is larger than 1. And then another thing to keep in mind is that I cannot think of a scenario where I can just have irradiation stability without vertical shear. I cannot think of that. So I think vertical shear is always present. And then the result of that is that you would get overturning of layers inside the disk. And that could potentially strongly modify the disk profile. Okay. So this is the end of my talk. Thank you. Yes.
Okay, we'll start.
Go ahead. If anybody else wants to ask.
Atsuma's got a question, but you can go first, Sam.
That's fine.
Yes.
I have two questions.
Yes.
Yeah, one question is about the parameters you use.
Right.
For example, CS squared is about, say, several times 10 to the minus 3 for these stars.
Several times 10 to the minus 3.
I
thought it's a few percent. Oh, okay.
So
I see. So speaking from my experience in dealing with inner edges of accretion disks, instability is more promoted when you have a lower sound speed and a higher beta. So now I have too large of a beta, but also too high of a sound speed. In the end, I think there's a chance that it will still work. 0.03 beta is a little bit difficult. 0.03 beta is a little bit difficult. But the one important thing is that this instability is sensitive to how thick this layer is. So if you have a low sound speed, this layer would become a lot thinner. Then I think that that can make it happen. Yeah.
My second question is that,
yes.
Yeah. I thought your instability is low, but still you have a global amplitude pattern.
Mm. I think that is local individually at every point here, but then there is a continuum of transition region all the way across. So there is actually multiple modes growing on at different radio local radio locations, and then you end up with basically this happening everywhere. But they grow at different time scales. So the one near the inner edge would go first. Well, no inner edge. Near the star would go first and just propagate outward.
So this is very interesting work, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about it some more offline. But I want to make a comment that
yes.
in BE stars, as Atsuo already made point out, the Eddington factor,
right,
which
right,
is
right.
what your parameter is, which I don't quite understand why you didn't use gamma as the usual.
Yeah, I come from a different view.
But the main point is that the stars are well below the Eddington limit, right?
Right, right.
Not near the Eddington limit. And so okay. the gamma, the beta, that you're called beta, is very small. Mm-hmm. But that's because it's free electron opacity. And the most dominant way to get much more opacity is through line transitions. And of course, stellar winds
for exactly.
stars are driven by line opacity.
Exactly.
And in line opacity, the key is to deshadow the line from its self-absorption through shear, mm-hmm. through the velocity gradient along the line of sight. Mm-hmm. But the Keplerian disk has a natural shear in it because of the fact mm-hmm. that there's... and so this is something that, you know, John and I have talked about many, gone back and forth many, many times. Mm-hmm. Line ablation of the disk, line-driven ablation of the disk is definitely a potential, much stronger possible process. Because the disk becomes naturally deshadowed, the material becomes naturally deshadowed and exposes the line, exposes the material to the full brunt of the line opacity. And line opacities can be thousands of times like on scattering opacity. So
yes.
your effective beta
yes.
for lines can be huge. But then you have to do radio transfer using taking account of shear.
Yeah.
We can talk about this more online, mm-hmm. offline, but it's very beautiful initially in simulations, and I think there's a lot of potential overlap with the other stuff that, you know, that I've been interested in for many years.
Yeah, I was also thinking about line opacities, but not sure, because to include line opacity, you need to consider the chemistry of the disk, at which part it is ionized and...
Yeah, that's pretty
yeah.
much set by the photoionization of the star, it's
right.
like stellar wind.
But
the
ionized
line opacity is pretty much fixed by yeah. the photoionization balance of the wind.
But the penetration of radiation would change the ionization fraction.
Yeah, but the surface layers, it's going to be
okay.
a lot more.
Yeah. Right.
John, did you have a question? And then answer it?
No, I think Stan probably said everything.
Okay.
So you see, we have using points of star model here, but in the lab repeaters, you have gravity darkening. Would that be good?
Are you referring to the obliquity of the obliqueness of the star? Right. That would probably have an effect. I'm not sure how big that obliqueness is, but this is instability in a dynamical timescale, and I assume the obliqueness is a lower order correction to that. So this probably doesn't affect the dynamics within the timescale this instability happens.
I just wanted to thank Jeffrey for giving the talk. I want people to realize that I think I'm correct in saying he had never heard of the BE star until last Thursday.
I read about it in a class.
Go forth and multiply, please. Because it's typical of the astrophysics community that don't know about BE stars. So.
I did a simulation yesterday. Just.
Yes. No, it's great. Thank you very much for agreeing to come.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.